1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
Brought to you by ScreenX, exclusively at Market Ridge Cinema in New Berlin. ScreenX provides moviegoers with a 270-degree viewing experience. Immerse yourself in the breathtaking visuals at Marcus Ridge Cinema's ScreenX in New Berlin. Get your tickets at marcustheaters.com.
Time to talk music news with our music expert, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. How's everybody?
We're good.
I should point out that Gary Graff is brought to you by Tap-In Golf Sims and Sports Bar, now forming summer leagues in Waukesha and Sussex, and Accelerate Medical, the leader in regenerative medicine and IV fusion therapy in Brookfield. Visit them online at AccelerateWI.com. All right. I guess we can start with Dickie Betts, right?
We should. You know, it's a good place to start. Dickie Betts, famous, you know, guitarist with the Allman Brothers, you know, wrote and sang their biggest hit, Ramblin' Man, but was, of course, part of that tremendous guitar tandem with Duane Allman. And, you know, you think Whipping Post, and you think In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, and all the great music they created. He passed away. Was 80 years old, passed away at home in Florida. He'd been battling cancer for more than a year and a half, also had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and passed around, you know, peacefully, apparently, with family and friends surrounding him. We hadn't heard much from him, really, in the past few years, certainly since before the pandemic. He had been sick, and then he returned to playing live again and doing some stuff and put out a live album even, and there were thoughts that maybe, you know, he might even have some new material, but that was not to be, although there may be some things in the vaults that we hear in the future.
I said earlier that I thought he produced Don Johnson's first album back in like 86 or 87, whenever that came out. But he didn't.
First album.
Johnson had like three albums out.
Yeah, there were more than one.
Yeah. It turns out he didn't play out. He didn't produce it, but he played on it.
And right.
But he's not the only guy. Stevie Ray Vaughan played on that Don Johnson album. Ron Wood. Yeah. Bonnie Raitt. Dweezil Zappa.
There was that moment.
Willie Nelson?
There was that moment at that time in the 80s. You know, you had Don Johnson, Bruce Willis did some stuff. Rico Tubbs, the other guy on Miami Vice, did some albums. And because, you know, they're actors and in Hollywood, and they got credible rock producers music producers to work on their albums, those guys knew people, and they were able to bring them in. And, you know, for the musicians, it's a paying gig, but it's also a kick to be on that kind of album. You know, you tend to forget that even at the upper echelons, these are people who view themselves as working musicians. Just like when you watch a great actor take what looks like a role in a crap movie, they'll tell you, I'm a working actor. I have a job offered to me. If it makes sense, I will do it. The same with Ronnie Wood or Stevie Ray Vaughan at that time, who was not... He had just come into the spotlight. So, you know, but these guys take the gig. You know, and Dickie Betts was much the same way. In fact, given how much the Allman Brothers, the various members of the Allman Brothers probably spent on, recreational things, he might have needed a few bucks.
I think Bruce Willis's
Bruno and the Heaters?
You just said it. Bruno and the Heaters, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That, yeah. I hated having to play his record back when it was out. I literally, Gary, I hated it. I thought, this song sucks. If anybody else would have produced this other than Bruce Willis, it would get zero airtime. I thought it was horrible.
Correct.
I thought the same thing about the Don Johnson album. Yeah. But you know who's missing from this list? But I'm surprised isn't on there. Glenn Frey. Glenn was on Miami Vice. He was kind of a recurring character.
Yeah, but Glenn Frey was the Eagle Glenn Frey before he was an actor. So, you know, he doesn't count as an actor making albums.
I mean, who didn't play on Don Johnson's album?
Oh, yeah.
Who didn't, like, hey, can you help a brother out here? You know, I'm on my TV show.
You know, it's all who's available. You know, the Eagles were a little more precious maybe than some of these other guys were as well. I mean, it's all down to your individual taste. You know, I could see very much a guy like Glenn Frey not wanting to be part of an actor's vanity album.
Nugent was not it either, and he was a bad guy in Miami Vice, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really down, like I say, to each of their individual perspectives on that kind of thing.
I'm looking at a video of Bruce Willis as Bruno with his heaters singing at the 1987 American Music Awards.
Oh yeah, it was a thing.
What outfit is he wearing?
It was a man. He's wearing an eighties outfit. You know.
Yeah.
All right, back to pressing business here.
I forgot all about that kind of stuff.
Taylor Swift. She's back in business, baby.
Oh, well, she never has been out of business, but the business heated up again overnight. Not only did she drop a new album, she dropped two new albums. We did get the Tortured Poets Department at midnight. Then at 2 a.m., she pops up on social media to say, guess what? I was writing so much that I have a whole other album, another 15 songs.
So she was doing all this. She was writing and doing the album, going to all of Travis Kelce's football games, doing a tour around the world over the last few months.
Yep.
I got to give her credit as this woman does not rest.
Who was it? It wasn't Beyonce, but another star this week kind of saluted Taylor Swift. It might have been Shakira. It was somebody like that, but came out and said, yeah, she works her butt off. And yes, she does. So here we have, it's for the formal title now, is the Tortured Poets Department, the Anthology. 31, count them, 31 new songs that the Swifties have been up since midnight tearing into, trying to figure out what they're about.
The 31 consent. New songs, that's like all the songs that a lot of bands ever produced.
I get the feeling like she has an idea for a song and might have a couple of ideas of which way to go with it. And instead of picking one or the other, she just does both.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's interesting. So, you know, inevitably there's going to be some, I don't want to call it backlash, but some people are, you know, some critics are going to at some point.
Yeah, the ones who don't want to be... who want to be canceled will criticize her.
Yeah, so New Musical Express in England had a line this morning saying that, I'm finding the line for you here. The reviewer says, Swift said that the Tortured Poets Department came from a, quote, need to write. And then she said, it's okay, but maybe we didn't need to hear everything.
Does she throw anything away? I mean, if there's 31 songs.
That would be an interesting question to ask of her and her producers.
What didn't make it?
I don't know. You know, with this body of work, was it larger or is this everything you worked on?
They take everything and work it till it works.
If you buy the physical product, you get Poems by Taylor and also by Stevie Nicks. So, you can have that experience. And then the consensus among the Swifties seems to be that a lot of these are songs about her very brief relationship with Matt Healy from the 1975. Because you will listen to that. I haven't really dived into the whole thing yet. I wasn't going to stay up, and then glad I didn't stay up to have to listen to another 15 songs. But, but you do get from the listening to the album a kind of, aren't you in a happy relationship now? But there's
a song in there about her and Travis too, right?
It appears there are some happier.
I heard
songs.
There was a song, but
it's basically a journey through all the emotions of a relationship, which is what we expect from her.
Well, Courtney Love's not impressed.
No. So Courtney decided to, who is a listen? She's a professional contrarian, right?
Yes.
This is kind of what she does. So it's interesting, and the irony, of course, being that she has started this podcast, this series with the BBC. It's called Courtney Loves Women. Courtney Loves Women, which is supposed to be about extolling women, and she used her latest episode to slam Taylor and others. I mean, she basically came out and she said,
wait a minute. Taylor and others are women.
Oh, yeah. Others who are women, yes. She, her judgment is Taylor is not important. She might be a safe space for girls, and she probably is the Madonna of now, but she's not interesting as an artist. Okay, that's something coming from somebody who hasn't been interesting as an artist in quite some time. We know this is all about clickbait. You know, who knows, you know, for all we know, she was up early this morning listening to the Tortured Poets Department, too.
My guess is that 95% of Taylor Swift's fans went, who's Courtney Love?
A good number of them did.
Maybe higher than that, even. Who?
And Taylor wasn't the only target here. Lana Del Rey, who Courtney said was the only artist that mattered besides her late husband, Kurt Cobain, Courtney's late husband, Kurt Cobain, and now she doesn't like her either, ever since she covered, Take Me Home, Country Roads, the John Denver song. Courtney Love also hauled off on Beyonce in this, kind of talking about how it was cool that Beyonce did a country record, but I don't like her music. But like I say, it's all about clickbait. It's all about somebody who's of limited relevance now trying to make themselves more relevant or at least more in the conversation.
I can't imagine there's one Swiftie out there who's going, well, let me go back and listen to Taylor's albums again. Maybe
see,
I was wrong.
Yeah, this is making me... probably just,
not. Jelly Roll's got his problems.
Yeah, he's got Jelly Roll the Man. Has an issue with Jelly Roll, the band. There's a band out of, I believe it's Philadelphia, kind of a dance band called Jelly Roll, one word. And they have filed suit claiming trademark infringement over the stage name. They're saying that they had trademarked the name. They've been going as a band since 1980 and received a trademark in 2010, and they renewed it in 2019, so it's still active. And then Jelly Roll, the man, two words, comes along and, you know, is basically usurping them, particularly online. So when you're searching for Jelly Roll, the band, you get a lot about Jelly Roll, the man.
Space between the Y and the R enough differentiate the two?
That's what Jelly Roll the Man's attorneys are going to argue.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to argue there is no, you know, they have not infringed on the copyright, which,
you know, if the
way,
WWF had to change to the WWE, I don't think anybody's safe when it comes to this sort of thing.
No, it'll be interesting to see what happens in court, or if there's an out-of-court settlement that basically sets up Jelly Roll the Band better than they've been ever. So we'll see what happens there. But that is going to be the argument, that because it's, you know, two words rather than one word, and also because, you know, listen, that's a little band in Pennsylvania. This is Jelly Freakin' Roll, you know.
But the laws are made to protect you no matter who you are.
That's right.
We'll see
what happens. The band Jelly Roll, by the way, said they did serve notice to Jelly Roll a couple years ago, you know, when he surfaced and started making noise, kind of saying, you know, hello, we're here. Don't call yourself Jelly Roll.
Are they just looking for a payday? But they played at the White House a couple of times.
They played at the White House.
They're a legit band.
They're legit. So I think it's not just about the payday.
Right.
I think it really is. Okay, somebody's looking to hire them, and they're searching for them online, and they get Jelly Roll, two words, and they have a hard time finding Jelly Roll, one word.
You know, CBS has to be going, you try to do something nice, like put a Billy Joel concert on, and you get all this grief. How many times have you heard Piano Man? You know how it ends.
I know, but, you know, when you're in the middle of Piano Man, and you got your groove on, and, the microphone smells like beer, you don't want to have to stop in the middle, which is what happened when the Billy Joel, the 100th show from Madison Square Garden, aired on Sunday on CBS. Because of the Masters, everything ran late on CBS. 60 Minutes started late, Tracker, and then Billy Joel. But it was set up so that local news would start at 10 or 11, you know, local time. And so there you were. You're in the middle of Piano Man. Screen goes black. Next thing you see is a local newscaster in quite a few cases apologizing for at the top of the newscast for we know what just happened. We're sorry, it wasn't our fault.
What if the guy would have come on to do the Masters update and finish the song? Inga's the song, you're the piano man. You know,
probably not cutting it. I think it would be a funny attempt.
The good news is you'll be able to see the show in its entirety tonight. At 8 o'clock on your local CBS affiliate.
Does CBS swear they won't cut it off this time?
Yes. Believe me. And believe me that every local news department will have their eye, and they are not going to give the go-ahead to start the newscast until Billy's taken his final bow.
Billy should, and he just has the character to do this, run long just to spite everybody.
Well, it's already been filmed.
Really?
That wasn't live. That had been recorded a couple weeks early.
Burton Cummings says, don't sing any of my songs, you guess who cover band, right?
You guess who. Yeah, so there's Burton Cummings, of course, was the most famous, singer of the Guess Who. And there is a current band out there right now, which is being operated by the original drummer and bass player. Only the drummer tours with them. And they were allowed to play Guess Who songs because Burton, and this, I'll try to make this as unconvoluted as I can, but Burton Cummings and Randy Bachman have publishing deals with ASCAP, BMI, the big publishing houses, which in turn license venues to play, to have that music played there. So even at the biggest arenas, when somebody's playing a cover song, it's because that venue has permission for that song to be played there. Burton Cummings has revoked that permission from his publishing companies and has said, no, basically not only this version of the Guess Who, but nobody can play these Guess Who songs. Now, are they likely to bust some local bar band, for playing No Time or American Woman? Probably not.
Clap for the Wolfman, These Eyes.
Right, but the spotlight is on the current Guess Who because they play larger and legitimate venues. They are not allowed, so now they are barred, basically, from playing anything Burton Cummings wrote for the foreseeable future. And, it hurts him, too. It means he loses a bit of his income stream, that he would have gotten had he allowed them to play the songs. But, Burton's just tired of the fake Guess Who's and is trying to cut it off at the knees. So the Guess Who, this version of the Guess Who, has already canceled a number of shows.
So it literally leaves no songs to play that anybody would know, right?
Not if you're the Guess Who, right? Nobody, you aren't selling tickets for the album you put out last year.
Yeah, nobody wants those. Randy Bachman is selling some guitars,
he's
too.
He's going to have a guitar auction on May 29th and 30th, where he's going to auction off nearly 200 instruments and other pieces of gear. Among them are a 1959 Gibson Les Paul Standard, on which he wrote American Woman. That's valued at $200,000 to $400,000. And also the 1955 White Fender Stratocaster that he played during the Bachman-Turner Overdrive days. That's valued at $100,000 to $300,000.
I want the one that he wrote Taking Care of Business on.
That's it.
That's the one?
The White Fender Stratocaster.
Yeah.
And
get
so,
up in the morning from the alarm clock's warning.
Yep. So again, May 29th to 30th at the Hard Rock Cafe, Julian's Auctions online. You can see the preview, pictures of the instruments. It should be, there's some great instruments there.
All right, where do you want to finish up this week, Gary?
Well, I guess, so everybody should tune in to, if you're interested in who the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees are going to be, you should tune in Sunday night, starts at 7 o'clock. American Idol is going to have the announcements. They'll announce the not only the inductees, but the induction date. And we know it's going to be in Cleveland. I'm told it's going to happen. So if the show airs at 7, I'm told it's going to happen somewhere, between like 7:15 and 7:30. Dave Matthews Band, again, won the public vote. They were number one. Followed by Peter Frampton, Foreigner, Ozzy Osbourne, Cher, Lenny Kravitz, and Kool & the Gang. So that's the public ballot, those seven. And that counts, as we've talked about before, that counts as one ballot all those millions of votes have the same weight as mine.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
did you send your ballot in?
Oh yeah, I'm a good boy. I send it in within the first few days.
Not going to say anything about who.
I don't mind. I went with an all rock ballot because it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I went with as much as I remember. So I know it was Dave Matthews, Peter Frampton, Foreigner, Ozzy, Lenny Kravitz, Jane's Addiction, and Oasis. So I went with the all rock.
All right.
That seems like a very level-headed ballot, Gary.
I thought so.
All right. We're out of time.
All right. We'll be talking about who gets in next week.
All right.
You guys have a good weekend.
All right, Gary. Talk to you next week.